Mentally tough. Just kind of a quick review. Been a couple weeks since we got together. Some of you haven't seen this. But this is the principles of winning at sports applied to winning at business. A couple of these guys kind of teamed up, and they, in their research of athletes, they found that certain things made for successful athletes. And so they went back and applied these principles to winning at business. Of course, that's going to sell a lot of books in the airport, so they're anxious to do that. But we can actually take those same principles, a lot of them, and apply them to winning at Christianity, because many of the principles apply. Everyone, the Apostle Paul said, who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. He says they do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Oh, there's Denny. Are you in charge of the ladies' prayer session tonight? Okay. All right. So we got that handled. This is taken here from the Greeks. The Greeks had Olympics, and the perishable wreath, instead of getting a gold or a silver or bronze medal, they actually had a laurel wreath that went on their head. And, of course, the laurel wreath isn't going to last that long. About the time the leaves dry and fall off, why, it's done. And, of course, the point is, the you know how much effort goes into competing at Olympic level. Apostle Paul takes, see, winning at sports, and he applies it to winning at Christianity. And so the parallel here is a scriptural parallel that we're drawing on, and these principles are principles that we can legitimately apply to our Christianity. Now, by way of introduction, I say this is kind of review material, but kind of bring us up to speed. See, it's not performance that will make you great, feel great. It's actually a state of feeling great that produces great performance. People tend to get that backwards. Said, well, if I just do well, I'll feel well. You better feel well if you're going to perform well. See, it's the ability to change your emotional state that they call mental toughness, to actually be able to take a look at the circumstances, adjust your emotions, and then perform. If you continue to what you've always done, you'll continue to lose, Luke said, when you could have won. Okay. So the kind of the overall look at things initially was maintaining positive energy. In other words, what do you got to do to stay in a mentally tough state? He talked about a low positive. A low positive is if you're sitting on the bench waiting to get it in the game, where you want to be is low positive. You don't want to be exerting a lot of energy on the bench, because that's where you're recovering. See, so but you want to stay and keep a good attitude. So low positive, low negative. You see that happens in games. You know, the Detroit Lions. You know, last place team, getting beat again for about 13 in a row, 16 in a row, something like that. And you know, the guys sitting on the bench, you know, they're just not there. Troubles inside the team, you know, poor ownership, poor management, all these things combine to produce a kind of a low negative, uninterested, irked, drained, you know. Absolute worst performance. High negative is a fight or flight. You sometimes see that toward the end of the game, where the losing team is frustrated, and so they're going to kill somebody on the opposite side. Okay, that's kind of an anger reaction. The guys that got a bad attitude. Sometimes a flight reaction comes out of fear. You'll occasionally see that if you got a humongous linebacker back there, and the guy is supposed to be catching the ball, who doesn't like to get hit, you know, he'll go into a flight reaction when he hears those footsteps coming. Now, not going to make many guys great pros doing that, but that's a good example of the flight reaction. It is energy, but it's not necessarily the best. The high positive is where you have the energy without tension, you can focus on the performance itself. It's generally a high level of performance, but it's not what he calls the ideal performance state. The ideal performance state is that white moment where everything's clicking. You know, every pass is working. Every ball's being caught. Dodging the defenders, you know, scoring. That's the ideal performance state. But high performance state is something you can get into and you can maintain. So one of the first things he looked at then was attitude. And the idea is that emotion follows thought. And so he's kind of got a little circle here. We'll kind of work our way around. And the first thing we took a look at was attitude. And what you got to learn to do is you got to learn to develop a positive attitude. Top performance, as we mentioned, is a result of being in a positive emotional state. Positive emotion follows positive thought. And so the essence of mental toughness is attitudes and emotions are intimately connected, and I assume full responsibility for my attitudes. That's a characteristic of Christianity also. I mean, you will assume full responsibility for your attitudes, whether you want to or not at some point. So the smart thing to do is just assume full responsibility right now. And don't blame it on anybody else. Don't blame it on circumstances. You know, just rejoice in the Lord always. See, and again, I'll say rejoice. We moved into motivation then. And you've got to have a purpose. You've got to have some passion in order to be motivated. A person that really doesn't have a strong reason for doing what they're doing is not going to be particularly motivated. And so a person's got to go back and analyze themselves. All these things require self-analysis, self-introspection here to see where I'm really at and what really motivates me, what really makes me move forward positively. And great performances are not motivated by external factors. See, but they're motivated by an internal passion, by joy in the performance itself. And it's a key thing that if you're struggling in this area, it's something you got to learn. You got to learn that the joy is the journey, and it's not in the actual goal itself. And until people get to that point, you know, they're not going to really comprehend the motivating factors in Christianity. When Jesus said that I am the bread of life, he who comes to me shall not hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the internal joy of just being able to perform as a Christian and to do the things that eternally satisfy. If you have to wait till you achieve your goal, that is heaven, in order to be happy or joyful, then you're going to be pretty unhappy for all the years that you're breathing. So the key thing is to learn, you know, the joy of Christianity itself. What motivates you to start performing doesn't matter that much. It's what keeps you performing in the middle of it is the key thing. And that's where a lot of people bail out. You know, people can start, but they have a hard time finishing. And you see that over and over and over again. And the people start off with great attitudes, you know, they charge up the trail. You know, they're good for the first quarter mile, first mile. And then when it really turns into work, then those attitudes start to sink. See, it's what motivates you while you perform that determines the quality of your performance. And so mental toughness, see, is the ability to summon at will the internal motivation necessary for being at one's best. See, you got to go back and be able to get that. And if you can't, you know, you're not going to perform very well. One of the young fellows in Ghana, Stephen Jantua, has struggled a little bit. You know, he has a boss that's, you know, and sometimes in Africa they can, you know, if you got a good job, the boss can be kind of an absolute tyrant because he knows it's an employer's market, and so he can, you know, he can do all kinds of manipulation techniques and play all kinds of games and. And, you know, the employee just can't get up and walk out that easy. I mean, they could, but, you know, there's some big decisions on the line when you do that. So I just kind of had a chance to visit with him a little bit afterwards, and I said, Stephen, I think down the road, the Lord's probably going to have it in mind for you to be doing a lot of preaching. And I said, what you're doing right now is just good training. It's getting you ready for the way it really is when you get out there and want to do the work of an evangelist. I said, so it's exciting to think that you're not only being trained, but you're getting paid for it. And that's a real positive plus. And so it's learning to have that motivation from someone from within rather than depend upon external circumstances. And so, one of the things that he tries to do to help people figure this out is to ask the questions, where do I want to be in 5 years? I would, to some degree, phrase it slightly differently sometimes. Who do I want to be in 5 years? If I had only 6 months to live, how would I want to spend those 6 months? If you had the same health that you have right now, and you're going to live 6 months from today, June 30th, and you're going to drop dead, what would you do in these next 6 months? That's a really good question. And being as how it's time for New Year's resolutions, self-introspection, December 31st, ringing in the new year, out with the old, in with the new, happy new you, this is a good time to actually ask that question. And maybe spend the next couple days answering that question. So you set in motion what it is that you're going to do. Am I deriving any satisfaction out of what I'm doing now? I remember when we were, kind of hitting that. Ken Rose is here, and I remember asking the question. I said, you want to keep doing this for the rest of your life? No! See, well, sometimes a person, got to go through some things to get to where they want to go. But are you, are you enjoying what you're doing now? The key is to get over to where you are. They didn't pay me to do what I do, would I still do it? That's a really good question. If I were to write my own obituary right now, what would be my most significant accomplishment? Is that enough? A lot of times there's something called the male midlife crisis. It happens anywhere from 25 to 65. One of the reasons for it is a guy looks at it, he had all these dreams and visions and goals and big ideas in his early 20s, and all of a sudden he's hitting 50, 55, and he's asked the question, what did I really accomplish? I mean, did I do anything that really mattered? And sometimes a guy looks at himself and says, boy, not that much. And it can be a real challenge because he's also run a little calculation that, say, he's 55. He's probably only going to be working until he's 65, and guy's health tends to fail pretty rapidly after 65 a lot of times. And so you got to take a look at that and say, well, am I going to be able to get done what I intended to get done? And so those are things to think about. Then we got into visualization, which is what you see is what you get. A guy by the name of Spinotti, Jim Spinotti back east, says, the me I see is the me I'll be, which is a pretty good statement. And God set aside the largest centers of the brain for visualization. As the book of Proverbs put it, as he thinks within himself, so he is. It's a great principle. And in order to perform, a person needs to develop at least three strong images. One where you're relaxed, that's where you're in your low positive. An image where you're energized, that's where you're in your high positive. And in your finest hour, that's your white moment. And you need to have a clear picture. And you can make it a composite if you want. But the idea behind those pictures is that's where you go to if you need to hit that mental state. You need to know that picture so that when you need to sit on the bench for a while, relax, you can put that picture in and go to your low positive. And that when they call you into the game, that then you step up and you come with your picture that's going to create the positive emotion. And in your finest hour, if you want to hit that high performance, that peak performance level. And the ultimate power of visualization lies in your self-image. People tend to live up or live down to their own images of themselves. To me, it's really, really interesting how often it is, over and over again, the people that are interested in motivation keep coming back to the idea that self-image is the key. Who you think you are is what's going to determine your performance. See, and that, to me, that's the essence of Christianity. God's purpose, see, was to bury the old self, to bury the elements of failure. First of all, in the waters of immersion. But if necessary, by continuation in a confession of sin to God. If we confess our sins, He is faithful and righteous to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. For the Christian, every day is a blank page. It's white, which is tremendously motivating and powerful. The idea then is to have a picture that anything from the past that might hold a person back, any chains they're still trying to clamp themselves on, are stamped. And so the person is prepared as a new creature for positive performance beginning right now. Now, God, of course, works step by step to produce the image of Christ, which is the ultimate self-image in each one of us. That's where God's going with it. And if you think you can help somebody get past whatever it is they're struggling with without dealing with the self-image, you're missing the boat. See, and so that's why the New Creation book is a key book in the series. And when you work with people, you want to work them through that and then follow that up with the cleansing inside the cup, because that's where the self-image changes. In the end, what you see is more than what you get. What you see is what you can become. See, present positive affirmatives. Last time we got into exercise a little bit. Physically fitter means mentally tougher. To increase the brain's fuel supply, you must engage in aerobic exercise for 30 minutes a day, at least 4 days a week. You know, recommended 5. You know, the Christianity is interested in the whole person. Now, there's limitations. You know, you take a guy like George DeWolf. George isn't going to be able to get on the treadmill for 30 minutes a day. Neither is anybody else. 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. Okay, can he still maintain a positive Christian emphasis while he's still having to lay there in his bed? Yeah, he can. Now, certain exercises George can do with his arms and stuff like that. He should do them every 10 minutes, 15 minutes or something like that. Keep those things going. But if you've got a moderate complement of health, then you can kick over here and really begin to make this work for you. That 2 or 3 hours a week, you get it back. You get to up to a 20% increase in your performance level. I tell people, there's no use arguing with me. I got twice as many red corpuscles in my brain as you have, so you're just going to lose. Focus on what you can control. See, find a way to work something into your routine. Everybody's lifestyle is different. Everybody's schedule is different. You know, it's challenging. Personally, for me, I need to have something regular, you know, so that I can do it at about the same time every day. Most of you are the same way. The challenge is if you have a schedule that bounces, makes it a lot tougher. But still, it's worth that investment. Aerobic exercise should be a higher priority than weightlifting or other anaerobic forms. Weightlifting, will really strengthen the muscles. But, you know, that's why nearly every gym has the cardio side there, too, because you got to do the aerobic side in order to really make the anaerobic side be more effective. And you create a play frame. You know, make it fun. You know, if it isn't fun for you, you're just going to quit. You know, if you hate running, you hate swimming, you hate bicycling, you hate walking, you know how much of that you're going to do? You're not going to do any of it, okay? So you got to enjoy it. You got to make games. You got to set little goals. You got to, just got to learn to have fun. Tonight, diet, mood, and food connection. A lot of people have been wondering, how am I going to handle this one? Actually, I do pretty good. Better than you might think. Okay. And so we're down here at the diet part of the wheel, working our way around. Food is something designed by God. You know, this is not the product of evolution. Okay, this is not the product of random mechanical action. This is not the result of heaped up chemical operations. Okay, this whole thing is designed by God. Side note: while I was in the airport in Seattle, I wandered through a bookstore, and there was a special issue of the Scientific American magazine devoted to evolution. So I snagged that one. And, of course, one of the things they're warning you about is creationists' latest tricks, you know, what they're going to do. And it's just really interesting to me, having been an evolutionist myself, you know, to go back and look at it and see what it was that I didn't see. When I used to read Scientific American, I started reading Scientific American when I was 14 years old and enjoyed it. And but see, if you leave certain things out, you can make people think a lot of things. And people need to just stop and think. Just think a little bit. See, is it possible? I always like the example of the watch. Is it possible that this watch, if you take it and scatter its pieces all over the front parking lot, then in a million years or so, that those pieces are going to randomly come back together and this watch is going to keep perfect time? Not going to happen. You know, we all recognize that. I had Cody come up one time and said, "Hey, Cody, is that going to happen?" He's looking at me like, "You got to be kidding me, man. You know, anything scattered in that parking lot's not coming back." Well, the simple cell is infinitely more complex than this watch. Why is it that the human race can't draw that connection is beyond me. I know the answer is because they don't want to. You know, that's what it boils down to. So, God made man's body a machine. It's a pretty complex machine. And it burns fuel. And you know, the fuel combines with oxygen and gives you energy. And so every cell is a mini engine inside the human system. And what's amazing, then you can take a couple billion of those cells and actually make them work together as a team. Do you realize how complex that is? Okay. But so, see, God's got lessons he's wanting to teach us. Didn't have to work this way. So the fact that he made us dependent upon something called daily bread is a teaching tool that God has for us. And you want to look at it from that perspective. Everything God has is a teaching tool. Just want to start looking for the lesson. So one time, see, Jesus was preaching, about 20,000 people present, 5,000 men. And he said, "I feel compassion for the people." He said, "I do not wish to send away hungry. They might faint on the way." So you don't get enough food, you know, start getting weak. You know, fast for a couple days. You know, see how much energy you have for dancing and prancing around and, you know, lifting heavy stuff and all that kind of thing, see. Starvation is what all communists like in Ethiopia. Remember 20, 30 years ago? You know, everybody's telling Ethiopian jokes. Man, I hated that. Because, see, those people were being systematically starved into submission by the communists that had overthrown Haile Selassie and were subjecting Ethiopia to communist rule. And, you know, there were people all over the world sending food to Ethiopia. And stuff was stacking up on the docks and convoys that were trying to take the food through. They were being bazooka'd by the communists to make sure that didn't get through. You know, you starve people, they get faint. And because the body's a machine, it's got to run on fuel. Apostle Paul said, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you?" See, now that body then has value. It's God's temple. And God designed it then to be brought into submission. And one of the key points then, and he wants us to learn, is that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. When you know that you need daily bread to physically sustain you, what are you going to need to spiritually sustain you? You think, what happens if you don't eat for a while? We get faith. What happens if you don't get into God's word for a while? Oh, I'm just fine. No, you're not. No, you're weakening. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall not hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. So there's some strategies. There's a direct relationship between diet and mental performance, because your body's a machine. And so sometimes you can modify your dietary habits and you can achieve substantially greater emotional control. Now, again, if you're not interested in achieving greater emotional control, you don't have to worry about this stuff. But if you're interested in performance, it's something you'll think about. How I first heard about this book, Mentally Tough, is on a talk show on KSL Radio. And I was coming back from Missoula late at night. And so the interview started out about 10 o'clock at night. And the way the host of the program introduced it, he said, well, we're interested in mentally tough here and performance on the job. He said, so, Mr. Lair, he said, let's take the 10 o'clock in the morning coffee break. Our guy has a cup of coffee and a donut. Is that going to give him better performance? And the guy said, well, actually, you could have something worse than coffee and a donut for your 10 o'clock coffee break, but you'd have to look really hard to find it. And that's kind of the theme that runs through here. Sustained mental energy, results from eating the right foods at the right time. How much you eat and when you eat it changes both the chemistry of your digestive tract and the chemical balance of your nervous system. I mean, this is called better living through chemistry. So your emotional state and your ability to perform is a direct reflection of that delicate chemical balance in the brain. Remember, the brain consists of about a trillion nerve cells, 120 trillion connections. Some people, 60 trillion connections. Okay. But lots of connections. We wish sometimes we'd make better connections. But it's a computer. That's what it is. It's a fantastic computer. And remember, the brain uses about 25% of the body's usage of oxygen. 3 pounds, the 3-pound human brain, the most complex and orderly arrangement of matter in the entire universe, that 3 pounds uses 25% of the oxygen and the energy that you need. So what affects the oxygen flow and the fuel supply to your brain is going to affect how well you perform. And so the major difference between food and drugs is that you ingest more food. Okay. Coffee. Let's take caffeine, for example. Caffeine is a drug, right? Does it affect a person's mood? Yes. Okay. Well, think of the foods you eat the same way. Okay? See, the old theory was that food was merely fuel. Didn't matter how it came in. Just shovel her in the burner. And the blood would take out of the food supply what it needed. And it just, kind of like this diagram here. You just bring the coal in your burner. It produces steam. Steam runs a generator. It produces electricity. And, electricity gets out there and runs your computer. That's what they used to think of it as. Well, I realize it's a lot more complex than that. So, many compounds present in foods have a direct link to your body's production of various neurotransmitters. Now remember, there's no two nerve cells that are directly connected. That between each nerve cell, where the little electrical impulses have to flow, it's called a synapse. And in that synapse are all these little neurotransmitters. And the chemical composition of what's in that synapse determines your attitude. And since foods are chemicals, okay, those chemicals impact what's in the synapses. That's why caffeine does something to you. I know if I drink a Diet Pepsi or something to try to stay awake to get from Great Falls to Bozeman at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm pretty jittery because I don't drink that stuff very often. And I can tell right away. It does keep me awake. I'll say that. But it makes me pretty jittery, too. And I guess if you're looking for deer, that's probably good to be jittery. But see, these compounds, they do affect a person's attitude. Oh, I have a great attitude while I'm jittery, by the way. I just thought I'd let you know that. But the impacts the chemical balance in your brain, see, which in turn is going to affect your performance. And so your 10 a.m. presentation is directly affected by what you had for breakfast that morning. Okay? So the components of specific foods can cause measurable changes in your internal chemistry. Do you notice measurable? Where they can hook meters up to you, and they're going to find out the impact of that candy bar, that nutrageous bar that was that big and that long. They're going to determine the impact. They can measure the impact on you. Okay, they can measure the impact of yogurt or spinach. I mean, it's measurable. Okay, and so most foods are quite complex. Okay, you got to understand. I mean, the way God produced this stuff. See, once again, who designed spinach? Who got it? Who designed beef or pork or fish? See, who designed carrots and pears and apples? Who got it? And they're very complex. A lot more complex than man sometimes can even get a handle on. There's something they call phytochemicals. A lot of times they'll take a bunch of these foods, and they'll extract out of it all the stuff that they know. They still got a bunch of stuff left over. And so they just group it and they call phytochemicals. It's called we don't know. Okay? And it's in every food, okay? A tryptophan, an amino acid, for example, is used by your body to make serotonin. Serotonin is one of the neurochemicals, one of the neurotransmitters you need for high performance. There are 22 amino acids that the human body uses. Amino acids are kind of building blocks. And you start stacking together, you get enzymes. Side note, some enzyme units in the human body are 156,000 amino acid units long. That's all directed by what's encoded in the DNA. You think it's an accident? See, the way it works is, if it's by random, first amino acid, your chance is 1 out of 20. Roughly, well, out of 22, but we'll use 1 out of 20. Chance of getting the next right amino acid is 1 out of 20. So that's 1 out of 400. To get the right third amino acid in a row, your chances, if it's random, 1 out of 8,000. And then 1 out of 160,000. So what are the odds of getting exactly the right amino acids in 156,000 units long? Zero. Okay. Okay, that's the... But tryptophan's one of those amino acids, and it's used by your body to make serotonin, okay? And there's a similar link between another amino acid called tyrosine and something called norepinephrine, okay, which is another chemical you need in the synapse for high performance. And so in your high positives, so your norepinephrine and serotonin are in balance. In your low positive, your neurotransmitter, serotonin, which is kind of a relaxer. See, remember, for high performance, you're relaxed, but up. Okay? Low positive, you're relaxed, but you're just cruising. Okay? So, serotonin is your big one, your low positive. Combination of norepinephrine and serotonin in your high positive. Now, in your high negative, norepinephrine... And I think epinephrine is in there also. The level's going to vary with the quality of the tyrosine, okay, and how that's performing in there is affected by that. Low negative, you're deficient in both norepinephrine and serotonin. So if you're not eating the right foods, see, they're going to get you norepinephrine and serotonin, you're not going to be able to achieve a high positive. Very easy anyway. So, science, like I say, is a little bit complicated. So you can't just eat foods rich in tryptophan. You know, doesn't work that way. It's this produces this, which produces serotonin and norepinephrine in your system. Okay. But tryptophan always increases serotonin production. Now, as I say, the relationship between tyrosine and norepinephrine is even more complicated. Tryptophan, for example, is an amino acid that the body has to get from the outside. The human body can produce most of the 22 amino acids, but there's 8 of it actually has to get it from the food. Doesn't get it from the food, doesn't get it. So tryptophan is one of them. So you're going to have to get it from the food in order to get the serotonin. Same way... tyrosine. So there are a few tricks then, but the key to maintaining adequate levels of both is to eat a balanced diet. Okay? So here's your typical American non-performance diet, okay? No breakfast. Okay, that's one of the worst things you can do is not eat breakfast. It just throws your whole body off for the rest of the day. Okay? Your body's already out of sync. And then you eat a chocolate donut, you know, Krispy Kreme. They love this. About 10 a.m. Lunch, a couple drinks, snake sandwich, fries. You know, this will. Oh, this is. I mean, that's mood control. And coffee, the candy bar about 3 p.m. Okay. And then a big dinner about 7 p.m. Okay. Now, you can't hardly devise a worse diet than that. I mean, you have to really work at it to get a more non-performance diet than this. Because everything exactly backwards for what you need for high performance. Okay? So, of course, brownies and milk at bedtime. Guaranteed to relax you, right? Yeah. The stuff in brownies and milk. Just don't feed him to Stan's cat. So, food contains 6 required nutrients. It's got water, minerals, vitamins, proteins, fats, and carbohydrates, okay? Water, yeah, you can get that from drinking, okay? But nearly all food contains some. Minerals, you're going to have a certain amount of copper. You have to have a certain amount of iron and phosphorus and calcium and all those sort of things. They're going to have to come from your food one way or another, or vitamin supplement. Vitamins come from your food. Vitamins are basically catalysts. And catalysts work in your system to actually make your enzymes work better. See, in order for an enzyme to work, enzymes are perfectly shaped by the chemistry. And they attach to certain other things. And what the vitamins do is they help the enzymes match up with what this is supposed to be grabbing more efficiently. So they work as a catalyst and make your body a lot more efficient. Proteins, that's your amino acids that we were talking about. You've got to have a certain amount of fats in your system, and carbohydrates. Carbohydrates being the fuel. Okay. So drink plenty of water and take a good multivitamin. And say, drink plenty of pop and take a good multivitamin. They say, drink plenty of coffee, lattes, mucho mocha, water, okay? Now, the amount, quality, and timing of proteins, fats, and carbs have a direct impact on your mental performance. Okay, how do you think that Nutrageous candy bar is going to work? You eat that about 10 o'clock in the morning. What do you think is going to happen by about 10:15? Okay, there's a reason for that. See, so both nerve cells and muscle cells get their energy from glucose and oxygen carried by the blood. Okay, glucose is your basic sugar unit. Okay, it's a very simple sugar. There's lots of sugars. Anything in ends at OSE is a sugar. Okay, so deoxyribose, for example, is a sugar. It's on the outside of the DNA molecule. Okay, so there's lots and lots of sugars, but glucose is your basic sugar units. It's a six carbon circle. That's what it is, and so that's your energy. When your plants out here, when they're taking energy from the sun and hooking it up with oxygen coming in through the breathing pores of these specially designed plants called green plants, then that takes that carbon dioxide, oxygen, hooks up with water, and forms glucose. Okay. So the reason that you and I have anything to eat is because plants make glucose. Okay, and glucose gets recombined in all sorts of chemical ways to produce everything else. So, for example, fructose sugar, which is fruit sugar, is a six-ring carbon attached to a five-ring carbon. Okay. Now, sucrose, which is what we commonly call sugar, is a six-ring carbon hooked with another six-ring carbon. Okay, but that's how sugars operate, okay? Now, a cell burns glucose. So anything you eat, at some point, the body's got to turn it into glucose. Now, if there's not enough glucose, see, the result is something called hypoglycemia. See, which, okay, if you ever seen anybody becoming hypoglycemic, they're not going to perform very well. They're not going to be the ideal performance rate. And if you're a little bit hypoglycemic, you can function, but you're not going to be able to function very well. Now, too much glucose thickens the blood, increases work for the heart. It's going to be no top performance either. That's what your Nutrageous candy bar is going to do about 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, what the body does is it tries to maintain an adequate glucose level while providing energy demands are high and cutting back when they're low. The thing is, see, both the brain cells and the muscle cells need glucose. Okay? Now, what can happen, see, is the muscles can start competing with the brain for the glucose supply. And because the muscles are what are needed for survival, the muscles are going to take it first. I mean, your brain just isn't going to run that fast all by itself. So if you need, if you need to outrun that grizzly bear, okay, your muscles are going to get the priority. Now, you actually need to outsmart the grizzly bear, but your muscles don't know that. So they're going to take the glucose, okay? And so if the muscles are taking the glucose and they're taking too high a percentage, not enough's getting to your brain. Then you're not going to perform very well. Basically, what happens is when you have a high sugar load, sucrose load, what happens is you got this sugar rush, okay? And so your body's trying to maintain the right level here. And so the sensors in the system detect there's way too much glucose coming into the system. So they increase the amount of insulin being kicked in. What that does is that shuts down the amount of glucose available, but it starves the brain. Basically, it's like deciding it's too cold in your office, and so you build a fire next to your desk in order to get more heat. And then what that does is it kicks on the automatic sprinkler system, okay? And, you know, you didn't get a lot of warmth out of that deal, okay? But that's a good parallel as to what's going on here. So that's why the non-performance diet works against you, see? When you awaken, it's after low energy demand, okay? Body doesn't store glucose. If you eat right away, you'll get the glucose from the food as it's digested. Body stores things, glycogen. For example, if a person's running a marathon and they do what they call hit the wall, then what the body, it's already used the glucose, all available glucose up, and it starts taking the glycogen that's stored, which that gets painful. Okay? They can get glycogen without that, but at a high energy demand. And so, since you don't have any glucose available, the liver dumps the glycogen in your system so it can be converted to glucose. Okay, to do this quickly, your body dumps epinephrine, which is what we generally call adrenaline, which pushes you toward the high negative. See, it's your adrenaline, remember? You've got to have the adrenaline to run from that grizzly bear. Okay. And so by mid-morning, your blood sugars have dropped, so you feel hungry, grab that donut. Okay. Common sugar, like I say, is sucrose. Sugar makes the glucose level rise, which brings on the insulin. Muscles get more energy. But the brain doesn't. So, when that happens, see, there's a lot less fuel for the brain. Okay? And all sugar does is starve your brain. So what you want to have then is you want to have a system. They're continuing. They're not going to end the story. They're going to go on and talk about lunch. Okay, your lunch is full of protein and fat. Basically, the parallel is like you got this Ferrari here, you know. Okay? But in order to make sure that you got enough fuel, you have to have a big trailer behind. You know, with all kinds, you got to have be able to stack firewood on there to convert to gasoline. I mean, that's basically what's happening. See, now you're, when you eat this high protein lunch here, you know, the Big Mac attack with the French fries and, you know, chicken fried steak or whatever. See, now your body's having to use a tremendous amount of energy to take that and convert that into glucose. See, it's got to, glucose is your fuel. So to break down, say, all the oil that the French fries are soaked in, body has to use energy and time to get it. So you're trying to get energy. In the meantime, your trailer's having trouble processing back there. And so the Ferrari said, come on, we want to go. Let's get some fuel up here, guys. So we're doing the best we can, boss. But, you know, it's just not coming. Okay? That's what you do with your lunch. So you're not sure what fuel to use. So you got to build a trailer to pull behind it. Realize how complex it is. chicken fried steak, French fries, chocolate milkshake. You realize how complex that is to process? So, the parallel says you load the trailer, charcoal, grass clippings, cow manure, wood scraps. You're always able to drive Ferrari, but the performance is going to suffer because you got that big trailer. And then you do the same thing all over again with dinner. Okay? So what you got to do is you got to create your own designer diet. I wonder how long they thought before they came up. Designer diet, you know. But the point is everybody functions differently. You know, everybody's system. Some people are allergic to peanuts. Okay, we don't want to feed them peanuts. You know, so what they're going to do is going to give an example of a good diet, and you're going to have to experiment yourself to kind of put together. One of the things you want to do if you're interested is keep track of what you eat, how much, when, and how it affects your performance. The result is a maximum performance diet that works for you. So the most important purpose is to ensure that the nervous system, you know, repeat, nervous system, brain cells, has an adequate and continuous supply of glucose throughout the day. See, if digestion occurs slowly and continuously, the body produces glucose at proper levels for good mental performance. So, for example, if you have complex food, okay, for example, unrefined food, okay, anytime you get refined flour, for example, okay, that's honed down to where you're feeding basically straight starch into your system. See, it's a very quick jump from starch to sugar. Okay? But if you have the unrefined flour, you know, you ground it, ground the wheat, now you have all kinds of complex things there. It's going to make your body digest things slowly and continuously. See, so if you're interested in performance, those are things you think about. And if you have small meals at regular intervals, like 3 hours apart, or, you know, your regular intervals with, you know, snacks, you know, then you're going to have, no, you don't eat a 2,000 calorie meal 6 times a day. I mean, not going to work, okay? But two factors determine how much grazing, will improve performance, quantity and quality. The average woman needs about 2,000 calories. The average man needs about 2,200. And the actual amount is determined by the physical effort, mental effort, overall metabolism, and other factors. You know, I mean, everybody's going to be a little bit different here. But they recommend 5 small meals, about 400 calories each. 50 to 60% carbohydrates, 15 to 25% proteins, and about 25% fats. Okay? And you can kind of use that to set up what you want. And so the complex carbohydrates, see, that's what it, when you refined products, they're simple carbohydrates. Your complex carbohydrates are what are found naturally in food that God designed. As whole grains, see, as contrast to refined grains, fruits, vegetables, much better than refined carbs because your body digests them more slowly. You get a steady flow of glucose. They say fish and fowl are a better source of protein than red meat, less fat. When you think of proteins, remember you need carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Proteins, meat, fish, and seafood, milk, buttermilk, yogurt, and cheese, your general sources of proteins. Fats, butter, margarine, other fats like oils, mayonnaise, gravies, and dressing, peanuts, all nuts, olives, and avocados. They're all loaded with fats. Because, see, this is what that... See, remember, nuts are just seeds, okay? And that's what that plant is going to need to get started, so they're loaded with fats as a source of energy for that new plant that's getting started. And the carbohydrates, then, are going to be fruits, vegetables, bread, rice, potatoes, pasta, cakes, and other desserts. Okay? So you got to gauge it accordingly. And so there's kind of a sample diet. I think that's in the printout. The person wants that. 3 p.m., total calories, 2,084. They run the percentages out for you at the bottom there. So that's one example of a diet then that meets performance standards. Your diet's got to contain foods you like. It's got to something you kind of commit to following the rest of your life. And a performance diet ought to enhance your life. It shouldn't be seen as deprivation. Okay. If you see it as deprivation, you'll cheat. You know, just how it works. So you should keep a daily chart if you're really interested in this for at least a month to see how your daily diet affects your internal energy state. I actually did this when I did this presentation probably about 20 years ago and somewhere around that category. And, I mean, I already had a pretty good idea because if you're in tune with your body at all, you have a pretty good idea when you're up or when you're down. And so you can tell pretty quickly, you know, how much something affects you, impacts you. Next week, breath control.